At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Thursday morning, September 14th, 2023. It is the Beating the Book podcast, mega pod for week number two in the National Football League. Gil Alexander, hope your week one went well betting-wise. As always, on the heels, by the way, of just a great appearance by Fezzik last week. And thank you to everybody who downloaded that podcast. Just tremendous numbers on the Fezzik pod episode, and he was great. We talked about all kinds of hypothetical NFL stuff. Hope everybody enjoyed that. I'll throw one in here just to riff as drift from that here momentarily. But first, please, our staples of the show from usually his mom's quirky attic in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but today he has upgraded to the dining room. It's Todd Wishnev. How you doing, Toddy?
What?
Not a good start.
You can't hear me?
Now we can hear you. Go ahead.
What's going on, Gilly?
How you doing, man? Good to hear you.
My screen is freezing. I can, like, Adam is frozen and Will is moving, and you're sort of frozen.
Okay, well, we hear you fine. Let me say hello to Will Hill, also at Not The Will Hill. He's on the Bear Bets podcast, both college and pro, with the Bear, Chris Valica. Willie, what's happening?
Boys, what's going on?
Do people call you Will, Willie, or Wilson? What's the way they go with that?
Willie's kind of a little bit of a playful nickname. I don't get a lot of Wilson, but yeah, look, if you want to start calling me Willie, I'm okay with that. It sounds fun.
Okay. We apologize for the audio here at the very outset of the show. We hope that it holds. Our rotating guest this week is one of our favorites. We always have him back for the postseason as well, and he's kind enough to join us for week number two. He is from Right Angle Sports. I don't know what else he's doing. He'll share with us. It's Adam Chernoff, everybody. How you doing, Adam?
Good. I think I started the show a couple years ago, like week 16 or 17, when all the guests that are usually on are tired. And so now I've made it up to week two, and, you know, we're moving up here a little bit. So good to be back with you guys.
Well, I had to finesse a different media conflict, and then we found your spot here on the podcast itself. What else, by the way, besides Right Angle Sports, like, what are all the different things you're doing? Because you're into a mess of stuff.
Mess of stuff as always, but the big focus is the football service with Right Angle Sports. So that's the big one. And then we have the daily podcast, The Simple Handicap, in year number six now. And then we're doing a whole bunch of video stuff all over the place. So if you're following the accounts at Right Angle Sports, you'll get everything that's coming out.
Sweet. All right. And, of course, Adam Chernoff, C-H-E-R-N-O-F-F, is your Twitter. Everybody can find out everything you're doing there. Adam, who is are you responsible for any of these line moves that just happened in the NFL market that just occurred in the last hour?
Nothing within the last hour. This has all been injury stuff for the most part. So we did a lot on Tuesday earlier this week, and then might still have a few things to come yet.
Okay. Todd is the court stenographer of the Megapod. Todd, how did we all do last week?
Gilly and Will were both 2-1. Outstanding weeks. Gil only missed with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Will only missed with the Washington Guardians. Or Commanders, or whatever their name is, as a 2-1. I went 1-1-1, as did Fezzik. We pushed the Pats, and I lost the Bears and won the under in Dallas, and he also Packers and Steelers. So 1-1-1 for me and the guest, and 2-1 for you guys. We all lost the teasers because we all fell for the Yenzer factor. If Yenzer gonna hype us up all summer and that. You're going to have a problem when you go against Super Bowl contenders and that. And that's what happened.
That is exactly what happened. Before we get into thoughts on Thursday Night Football and if there are any bets here, I just wanted, because we talked so much about this with Fezzik last week in terms of like optimal situations and what teams ought to be doing or what may develop as the years go on in the NFL in certain situations. That was sort of a conversation that riffed off, you know, going from 14-point deficit to 8 and how people should be taking the 2 at that point. Then we got into other kinds of crazier situations. Something happened in that Kansas City-Detroit game. I brought it up on a numbers game. Obviously, it was a big Twitter thing as well. Joe Pita and I were talking about it. But something fell into our lap right after we recorded the Megapod, which is that 4th and 25 that the Chiefs had, which started out as a 4th and 20, but then they false started. This is late in the game. I want to say there was 2:09 left on the clock. There was still the 2-minute warning. There was still their full allotment of timeouts. They were down 1 point, 21-20. And we were discussing how the optimal play at that point would have been for Patrick Mahomes to sprint back to the 9-yard line, let's say, and go out of bounds north of the 2-minute warning, forcing Detroit's hand. In essence, at that point, they couldn't get a first down to beat you, which is what happened after the Chiefs failed to convert on the 4th and 25. And I guess my question is, and I hope people understand what I mean by that. So Detroit would have been forced to either kick a field goal or score the touchdown. The thing that could have torpedoed that is if they had gone for 2, I suppose, after the touchdown. But let's just throw that to the side for a second. I guess my question to you, Adam, and I'll start with you, is do you think a team in the NFL will ever get there? Because this was the perfect situation for that.
I saw that, and I'm really intrigued by the comment because it was so original. I hadn't seen that really said before. But I feel like it's the defensive thing that we talk about always being the optimal play and how every team should do it, and no team ever does it. I don't know if we ever see that happen, but I feel like we talk about it every single week in some scenario, especially later in the season. So once the defensive holding starts happening at the end of games to run out the clock, I'll be a believer that we'll see a quarterback go out at the 9.
End of games and end of halves too, right? Where you can just defensive right. hold your yep. way into the you know, one untimed down, I guess, sort of thing is what you're talking about.
Is yep, that, exactly. Yeah. And then it puts the offense in a position where they have no time and they can't score anymore. So yeah. Once that happens, I'll be a believer to see a quarterback go out at the 9. Because really, this could happen no matter. It doesn't have to be 4th and 25. It can be 4th and whatever. It right. would be the play to make in any circumstances. So now that it's out there, let's see what happens.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be 4th and 25. You're right. But 4th and 25 made it so right there in front of us obvious, right? It's like, oh, you guys are still going for it even after the false start? And by the way, Patrick Mahomes, because he's so great, almost converted it, but it banged off, I want to say, Justin Watson's hands on the 4th and 25.
So the question is, where on the field does this become no longer the optimal play? Like, if it's 4th and pick a number, but you're at the 48-yard line,
right,
of your on your own side of the field, are you still going back to, like, where's the cutoff is what I would be curious to know, because there's probably a point and a yard line with a down and distance where it no longer becomes optimal. But in that circumstance, it certainly seemed obvious, but there's probably, it even gets more ridiculous where that becomes the play to make rather than maybe going for that 4th down.
Yeah, no, totally agree. And that was, and I just want to get it right, because that was 4th and 25 at the...
Where were they? They were like the 35-ish?
I'm going to tell you right now.
Yeah, fourth, I think they were on 20.
4th and 25 at their own 30 with 2:09 left. So it would have been a 21-yard loss. So yeah, everything was so perfect in that situation. The distance, the place on the field. Now, of course, you know, the other response to this, I mentioned one way to torpedo it was that, yeah, but then what if Detroit scores and then gets a 2-point conversion? The whole thing, you know, backfires. You know, Detroit could, you know, conceivably then take the next play if there's too little time. You know, someone was saying, oh, what if Detroit then just runs up and down the field and tries to knock out time? Like, as a whole, there's, you know, it can get really, really ridiculous. But anyway, I think it's a fascinating scenario. No need to belabor it anymore. We'll just see if teams start to develop this thing. And this is all a discussion because last week Fezzik and Todd were like, oh, 80% of teams, when they're down 14, they know when they get to 8 to go for 2. And I was like, there's no way it's 8. Will and I were both like, there's no way it's 80%. And So anyway, just fascinating football situations where I think baseball has sort of figured out stuff analytically. Football hasn't quite. Like in a chess game where there's always an optimal play. Football has not figured out optimal plays at optimal times was the whole point of all of that anyway.
Could you imagine Fezzik if he ends up in some wild reality getting a coaching job and implements all of this, the Monday morning press conference after where he has to atone to the media? I mean, it would be an all-time sports moment if that ever happened.
That is such a great call. How funny that would be every Monday morning. I can't wait for Fezzik's post-game presser. That'd be so great. Oh, man. Stevie's such a nice guy. It's so great that his mind works this way. Okay, Thursday night football. Todd, you will tell me if I'm off format, right? Thursday night football. And Survivor. We all got through on Survivor? Yes?
The Ravens, I got through.
Yeah. I mean, I have multiple entries, so four of the five got through. I actually lost on Denver. One of my entries, I wanted to go frisky, and Denver didn't get there. But I had Baltimore, I had Washington. Washington, yeah, barely.
I had Washington.
Yeah, Washington, but we barely got there. What'd you say, Todd?
Can we do a quick in-game talk?
Yes, if you have something, for sure. Yeah, what do you got?
Yeah, I think something to look at. Some of the books have team totals for third quarters at halftime, and that's really interesting stuff because, you know, first quarters and third quarters play very similarly. Obviously, third quarters are a little higher scoring, but still they play similarly in the sense that, you know, you get long first drives and the scoring is obviously much higher in the second and fourth quarter. So you'll see in NFL games, 9.5s, 7.5s, that's for both teams. But now they're putting up teams for third quarters sometimes. And if you know who's getting the ball first, which you obviously do, that can be, I think there's something to do there. And they even keep them up live often. So if you see a team, you know, that really struggled to move the ball in the first half, the other team, you know, is getting the ball to start the second half. I did this with the Bears last week and actually lost, but it was like their only touchdown of the game. I think it was just kind of unlucky. But the Bears were 3.5 team total in the third quarter, and they really couldn't move the ball at all. And the chances, I mean, they couldn't score a touchdown. That's for darn sure. And they weren't getting the ball first. The Packers were getting the ball first. So now if the Packers go down and you have a 4 or 5 minute drive, now you basically, the Bears get one shot at getting a touchdown. Because if they don't get a touchdown, the Packers now get the ball with, say, sub 6 minutes to go. And even if they go two or three minutes, there's not enough time for the Bears to come back and get a touchdown. A lot of these touchdown drives are a lot longer than 3 or 4 minutes. So I think you want to keep an eye on these third quarter team totals, not just third quarter totals in general, because I think if you can get a feel for who can move the ball and who can't, you know, a lot of the garbage time touchdowns, a lot of the touchdowns from teams that can't move the ball happen in garbage time. They don't happen in the third quarter typically, although it did happen with the Bears. So oftentimes you'll see a team, they can't move the ball the entire three quarters of the game. All of a sudden, the fourth quarter, they get a touchdown. But you don't have to worry about it in the third quarter. So I think you want to keep an eye. I know that's kind of just a general thing, but you want to keep an eye on these teams that are not moving the ball at all, and there's no reason to think they can. They're not getting the ball to start the third quarter, and they got to get you over a field goal. I think there's going to be some opportunity.
Yeah, it's a nice riff off of what you were saying last week about totals in general into the third at the end of the third quarter, but this is team totals at the end of the third quarter. What percentage of books would you say, Todd, actually offer this? Because it's not all of them.
There's probably 20 to 25% have them.
Okay. Sounds about right to me.
Maybe less, maybe 20%.
Yeah.
I can think of two already that usually have it.
What are they? Tell them.
I know Rivers has it. For sure. That's one that definitely has it.
Yeah. Because, like, I don't think, I'm trying to think, like, just an offshore, like, bookmaker does not, for instance.
No.
I don't think Caesars does. Caesars doesn't. Do they? No.
They have, sometimes they do have that kind of
sometimes
thing.
Sometimes they do? Okay. All right. Maybe I just haven't seen it. Okay. Always a good one. By the way, again, the audio on Todd and on Will, I apologize for. This is our new spot here at the D at Bar Canada, and they're working through everything, so I apologize. You got most of the drift of what Todd was saying, though. But if this persists, trust me, I will make sure we do this from somewhere else moving forward. But hopefully we can slog through this. Thursday Night Football, we're about to do our best bets, side or totals, our favorite three bets. Does anything from tonight's game qualify as one of your your three top bets. Do you have any thoughts on this, Adam?
I really like the over in this spot tonight. A couple reasons. I think the Eagles defense is going to take a big step back as we progress throughout the season. Lost some key pieces in the offseason, but also last week they lose N'Kobe Dean, who was their green dot in the middle. The green dot got passed over to Reed Blankenship. He's going to miss as well. He was their leading tackler, and they lost another corner as well. And now you have Fletcher Cox, who's hurt as well. So last year these two teams played, the total closed 49.5. I think we have the Eagles with a worse defense. We have the Vikings offense, which is just full-on chase mode with Kevin O'Connell. I think they're going to be a team to look at when you need a partner for the over all season long. The Vikings defense is completely flipped with Flores. It's completely boom or bust. And so I think both teams move it pretty comfortably. Seeing 49 or 49.5, I think both numbers good to go over.
Yeah, the injuries on both sides there. Fletcher Cox, questionable. N'Kobe Dean out. James Bradbury out. The cornerback, safety Reed Blankenship out. And then on the Vikings side of the offense, Christian Darrisaw questionable. That'd be huge. Garrett Bradbury, their center is out. Obviously, a Marcus Davenport questionable on the defensive side. A defense that, by the way, generated a 23% pass pressure rate on Baker Mayfield despite blitzing at the highest rate. So a lot of that, when you put it all in the wash, could very well point to an over for sure. Will, any thoughts on this?
Yeah, I echo those sentiments in terms of the over, everything with Flores in terms of like the blitzing, where it's like Adam said, boom or bust, where it's not going to be 4 or 5 yards at a time. It's going to be big chunks. It's going to be big plays. So I would definitely look at an over. And Minnesota, you know, I thought Minnesota, you look at the scoreboard, they only put up 17 points, but they moved the ball up the field. They were, I think, 6 yards per play, maybe a little over. They just shot themselves in the foot when they got close. So I would take the points and I'd look at it over. I agree with Adam that, you know, Philly's not that good on defense. And goes back to last year. I mean, all the good quarterbacks they played really tore them. Mahomes in the Super Bowl, Rodgers on that Sunday night, even Goff. The rest of the quarterbacks, it's a lot of Daniel Jones. It was a lot of weaker quarterbacks that they feasted on. So Vikings and the over, stronger on the over.
Eagles down to a 6-point favorite total right now at 49. Todd, anything from you here?
I'm not using it as my pick, but I kind of like the Eagles team total. I don't know if you guys do this, but if you like over a particular game, but you also have more confidence in one of the teams going over, do you think, hey, maybe I'll just play this as a team total over? Like, for instance, last week I thought the Giants weren't going to move the ball at all, and instead of playing the under in the game, I just played the team total Giants under 20.5, and I feel like I give myself even a little bit better chance. For instance, in this game, if I had to play something, I'd probably play the Eagles over 7.5, because I just don't think the Vikings have a great defense. And after that Eagles kind of disappointment on offense, I think they'll be on all cylinders tonight at home. So I don't know. Do you guys do that at all? Look at the team totals as opposed to just the regular total?
I do a lot in baseball. Detroit was a team I did it with last year. So yeah, I agree. It's a good way to get at your handicap better.
Adam or Will, was that a best bet for you, the over, or is that not one of your top three?
No.
Adam?
Yeah, I'm coming ready to fire, so we can put it in or we can still do the full three if you want to.
We'll go to you and we'll see.
Got a lot of hot on opinions this week, Gil.
All right, we'll see what comes out of your mouth then. If that ends up being one of your top three, let us start with the best bets of week number two. Your week one was good, Adam, by the way, betting-wise. Did it go well for you?
The Steelers put a damper on a lot of things.
Me too.
First half and full game there were kind of a killer. Other than that, it was okay, but the Steelers really put us in a bad spot.
Yinzers. All right, what's your number one play, Adam, for this week, week two?
Let's go to the Colts, -1. This is, to me, it pretty simple, and I'm giving a pretty generous number just based on that. We're going to see this one move here in about the next hour, hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll say about the Colts is I'm looking at a better head coach, a better play caller, and I'm looking at a better quarterback against Texans team. Shortly rule out both of their starting safeties. They lost their best linebacker. They put a defensive tackle on IR a little bit earlier this week. They have both of their tackles on the offensive side, as well as Dalton Schultz is banged up, but will likely play. I think Andy's just going to run ball consistently with Richardson. His injury is not a concern. I'm not ready to put these teams on equal footing like this price is suggesting, with very limited home field inside the division. So I'll happily take the Colts here. And I'll release it here on the pod and say minus one for the price. I know it's really, really fair, but I think by the time people listen, that'll be the number.
Okay, because we did see some Houston movement this morning, right?
There was, and that's gonna gonna come back.
Okay, Indianapolis. We get a release from Adam Chernoff right there, minus one.
His pick is Colts plus one. Is that right?
Adam said Colts minus one is where he got it. Is that correct, Adam?
I'll say that, anticipating what we're probably gonna see here.
So plus one.
It is, but I'm gonna move.
All right. Well, but it's plus one right now. Todd, is that the consensus?
Yeah, I think we just Colts plus one is the current number.
All right. Well, we'll give him Colts plus one if that's the consensus. Todd, what is your... Actually, let's go to Will. Will, what is your number one?
I will go with the Jets plus 9.5. I still think that's maybe the best defense in the league. I think Dallas will probably look at this game, as long as we don't screw it up, as long as we don't turn the ball over, we'll be okay here. We can win a 20-13, 20-16 type of game. Let's be conservative. Dak has made comments about, hey, I'm not going to turn the ball over like I did last year. And it's not a great situational spot, Jets coming off a Monday night, but I just think this is a close, low-scoring game. Thought about playing the under two, but I will take the Jets here plus the 9.5 points.
How about plus nine? Are you seeing nine, Todd?
I am seeing on the Jets, JTS plus nine, I see.
Yeah, how about nine, Will?
All right,
will
I'll you take the nine.
He'll take the nine. Look at him trying to get a little hook in there. See what he was doing right there? Will's like he's been on this show. No, we got to have it. We got to have a consensus.
I know, we
got
to take three.
Consensus, gotcha. My friend.
Yeah, nine's fine.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
Todd, what's your number one?
My number one is going to be the, I'm going to do it. I'm going to go with the New England Patriots plus the 3 points at home against the Miami Dolphins. I was watching that Miami game extremely intently. I know everyone is in love with Tua throwing it to wide guys running wide open over the middle and then throwing it deep to this guy, to Tariq Hill, and he's running for 1,000 yards. By the way, on every play, it looks like he's about to get killed. And then literally he throws it. He's very accurate, and some guy grabs it from 9 yards and runs for 50 yards. Okay, this is – can we not forget that the Chargers are the Chargers? Okay, and this is the kind – I mean, how many games have we seen guys running around like ridiculous – against the Chargers. We've seen it a lot. I think Bill Belichick told you last week that, hey, he's not too old to coach defense. I think he did a wonderful job against the Philadelphia Eagles on the defensive side of the ball. And you could make the argument that had their offense just not made any mistakes, they may have won the football game against the Philadelphia Eagles. So now we get to go against Tua, and I think, I don't know if, Gilly, do you remember last year we talked how there was some issue about Tua able to throw the ball over the middle and certain coaches were able to stop that nonsense and really make it much harder for Tua?
I don't know
if you remember. There was somebody who came on the pod who was talking about that. I just happen to think that Bill Belichick can cook up some kind of goulash of defense here to keep this game close against a team, a Miami juggernaut on offense. Oh, my God, this is the greatest team. By the way, Tua's one hit from being on the sideline at all times. Okay? So give me the Patriots. I think they can keep it close. By the way, Miami's defense did not play well. They had played one drive well, the last drive of the game. Other than that, they couldn't stop him at all. It was, you know, guys were running wide open. Austin Eckler running for 60 yards down the sideline. They throw it to, like, Kelly. He's running for 50 yards. So I didn't see anything from the Dolphins defense to make me think that the Patriots wouldn't be able to move it. They moved it against the Eagles at times. Why can't the Patriots keep it within three at home?
So much. We learned so much from week two games, right? We find out what in week one was just an aberration because we only have that one data point, and obviously there's massive recency bias from just that one data point. More than any other game, perhaps that's the one where we're going to learn. Were the Patriots just playing an Eagles team that didn't play in the preseason, and so they looked better than they were? Were the Dolphins just, you know, was their defense horrible because it was against the Chargers? Or is the Dolphins' defense truly horrible? And you're right, they only showed up for that last drive, just in the nick of time did they show up. So, I mean, I think there's so many question marks here. By the way, the one thing about Tua that I just want to say, do you feel like the sentence that everybody, or the phrase that everybody uses, and appropriately so, oh, he's one hit away from, you know, who knows, God forbid his whole career being over because of the concussions. But do you feel like because that phrase is attached to every sentence about Tua, that somehow in the wash he gets diminished, that he's actually really, really good, and that that just sort of somehow in our brains detracts from him?
I don't. I think those guys are open by a mile. If he was on the Giants, the Chargers, on a bunch of different teams, I don't know that that would translate as well. So I think he's a pretty good player. He's very accurate, but I do think he's a limited player.
I will tell you this. I thought the two huge plays to Tyreek in the second half of that game, I have no idea how the ball got through to Tyreek.
Yeah,
he was not open on those plays. Like, it was incredible.
I guess I'll just, Adam, do you want to say something about that?
I think it's hard to disrespect someone who works so well together with the coach and the play caller and the play designer. And I think the changes that we saw McDaniel implement against Chargers to make up for the issues that they had against that defense a year ago really deserves a lot of credit and kind of gets pretty scary for the rest of the league when you're seeing all the tweaks that he made on that sort of readjustment in the game plan to take on that defense again. So I think there's a lot of upside here with the Dolphins offense and that whole Tua side. I mean, who isn't one hit away from being hurt in this league? And so I think just because we've seen it so frequently with him and recently, it gets a little more attention than it deserves, but every quarterback's one hit away.
Todd, you wanted to say something about that?
I think he's a very good player, but I think, like, anointing him like one of these elite quarterbacks
I don't think anybody's anointing him an elite quarterback, but I think when people say Tua, they don't consider him like a top 10 quarterback. I think he kind of teeters on the edge of a top 10. I really do.
Maybe on the edge.
Yeah.
Would it be different if he was right-handed?
How so? What do you mean?
Well, just visually, maybe a lot of people don't connect because it looks so different.
Oh, maybe.
You see it in golf all the time. I mean, it's kind of a common thing. Just looks different, and people kind of get it in their minds that it's different.
I definitely like Joe Montana more than Sung, if that's what you're asking me.
Remember that stat before Tua showed up? The last left-handed quarterback to win a football game, who started an NFL game to win an NFL game. Do you remember what the answer to that question was?
The Sims?
Kellen Moore, I believe. It was years. Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, what happened to left-handed quarterbacks? They just, like, disappeared. When we were kids, they
Who was it? I didn't hear you.
Kellen Moore.
Who was it?
Kellen Moore.
Oh, Kellen Moore. Okay.
Yeah. Kellen Moore is left-handed, right? I didn't get that wrong. Okay.
No, you're right.
All right. Let me do two because we snaked.
Quarterback rankings have Tua 17th.
Tua 17th. Huh. Okay. Rankings? Whose rankings?
Mike Sando. The survey with the GMs and the executives, etc.
The survey rankings from GMs. I like Sando. Sando's been on this show many times.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. I get two because I get the snake. What are you seeing Seattle at right now, Todd? This has come down since guessing lines on Monday.
The Seattle Seahawks are at, I see them at +5.
Okay, it was +6 during guessing lines, and I couldn't believe it. I will take the plus five here just because I'm gonna stay true to what my first reaction was of the week. I'm just going to base this on a complete week one overreaction in the market. I get it. Detroit is on extra rest. They went in. They beat the Kansas City Chiefs, though it was a Chris Jones-less, Travis Kelce-less Kansas City Chiefs team. I don't want to take too much away from them, but that's kind of a big deal. And I get it. A lot of people think Detroit's going to be great. A lot of people have them as, you know, no less than the fourth best team in the NFC. But if you just go back to the Wednesday before that, the day before, and if I told you that this was going to be the line, you'd probably be like, wait a minute, I thought Seattle was going to be the fourth best team in the NFC. What happened here? And Seattle couldn't have looked more horrible against the Rams. But it is the old thing. Marco D'Angelo used to be on the show, used to say all the time, no team is as good as they look one week or as bad as they look the previous week. And I think this is too many points. I think Seattle keeps this close, if not wins it outright, but I think that's too many points. I will take the five on the Seattle Seahawks just based on the fact that I think this is way too much of an overreaction. And I think that the way Dan Campbell plays, you know, I used to, on Guessing Lines, I used to cite all of the fourth down tries that teams would take because they were so anomalous. Now I can't even do that anymore because everybody tries to convert a fourth down from everywhere on the field. Everybody who used to crush Brandon Staley, everybody's playing like Brandon Staley now, it seems like. And Dan Campbell, I think he makes some suboptimal decisions in this for the, I don't know if he's like trying to like fill this narrative about himself. I got to be the man, go for it and stuff. And I think that nips him in the butt sometimes. And I think it will here. I'll take Seattle plus the points in this ball game. Since we're snaking, I'll go again. I'll take the Chargers minus three. As bad as that defense looked, just again, reacting to my first instincts this week. The Tennessee Titans, Ryan Tannehill, and I know we'll get to this, Adam.
Wait, Gilly?
Yeah. Yes.
Gilly, before you continue, is there that thing, friends don't let friends bet the Chargers?
Yeah, no, I know. I know. I say this. By the way, this could get down to 2.5 by because it's minus three even at this point. But I'll lay the three on the Chargers. I think Ryan Tannehill is donezo. I know both Adam and Will are going to share with us that Adam is a big Jets fan. That he may be pro Ryan Tannehill in terms of which quarterback the Jets should acquire. I think he looked awful against the Saints. And as great as the Chargers' offense was, so no problem there. But it's Brandon Staley who came as a defensive guy. This defense, how is this defense with all of these guys, with Khalil Mack and obviously with Joey Bosa? And you have this just solid secondary. How can they possibly be this bad? Or is Miami just that good? I don't think the Titans can hold them on defense. I don't think the Chargers. I think the Chargers defense will actually step up here against a Tannehill-led team. I will lay the 3 points on the road with the Chargers. That's pick number two for me. Todd, snaking back.
Last night I was watching some WNBA and losing bets as I like to do in WNBA, and at the same time, I was using Twitter, and I saw Adam Chernoff, so I clicked on his show, and I listened to the whole show. It was very enjoyable, Adam. Thank you very much. It was some kind of a RAS on YouTube. I don't know exactly what it is, but you could find it. But the point was very informative. I learned on that show there were quite a few injuries in a city just to the northeast of Washington called Baltimore. And they have quite a few injuries down in that neck of town. And they're playing against the Cincinnati Bengals. The Cincinnati Bengals could not have looked worse as a football team than they looked in Cleveland last week. Is Joe Burrow all of a sudden the second coming of, I don't know. He looked as bad as Jay Cutler. I mean, he was horrible last week. I've never seen Joe Burrow look. I had over 31.5 that I took at halftime. It was a 10-0 game. I said to myself, they've got to go over 31.5. Joe Burrow will at least get a backdoor touchdown for me, right? No, they don't get a backdoor. They don't even go for it on 4th and 5 down 20 feet. Guys, what are you doing? You can, with 9 minutes left, 24-3, not going for it on 4th and 5. Now, maybe they knew they weren't going to get it anyway. But the point is Joe Burrow did not look very good. I have a feeling that National Football League teams, and very good ones, have a tendency when they look horrendous to look a lot better the next week. And now we're going against a Baltimore team that did what they had to do. They weren't great in the first half. I think that was more a the other team was bad. The Texans are bad and were just, you know, did what they had to do to get the W. But I didn't think Baltimore was looking that good. Adam Chernoff tells me 1,000 injuries on Baltimore. Am I correct, Adam, that you said that there was 8,000 injuries on Baltimore?
I think I said 9,000, but if you're correcting me with 8, I will look back. But
I was
you're absolutely right.
I was somewhere close that there's a lot of injuries on Baltimore. Give me the damn Houdet Bengals minus the 3, and we're going to get it done.
Will.
To Todd's point, I played under 10.5 wins for the Ravens. I think that's just so many injuries. They lost so many guys already. If you're resorting to Melvin Gordon at this point in his career at running back, that's not a good sign. So I think under 10.5 is a good bet.
Brought him up from the practice squad. Yeah, they had Melvin Gordon on the practice squad.
Oof. All right, I am going to go with a pick I hate, a team I hate. The Denver Broncos, I am going to lay, what are we seeing, 3.5?
Yeah, 3.5.
Denver Broncos. Laying Gilly, what do you have on Denver?
3.5, and I am, let me just say, this was my third pick as well. Go ahead, Will. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I am just nauseous even discussing this team, but Washington on the road. Look, I mentioned I had Washington Survivor last week. It wasn't pretty. It wasn't easy. That offensive line was really bad. Howell got hit a ton. I didn't think Howell was very accurate. Now you got a 1-0 team. It's fat and happy. They're going on the road, a team that can't afford to be 0-2 and be 0-2 with two home games in Denver. This is sort of a must-win game for Denver. I just don't know that offensive line for Washington is going to travel well here, so I will lay the 3.5 with Denver.
I'm right there with you. I'll get to mine in a minute. Adam.
So I got to go 2 here for the sake of the snake. Is
yes,
that right?
Yes, 2 for the sake of the snake. That's exactly right.
All right. I'm calling on the official stenographer here of the show to give me a ruling on the Jacksonville point spread. Is 3.5 fair here?
That's what I'm thinking. 3.5 for the Jags.
3.5.
Okay, so let's do the Jags is pick number 2 plus 3.5. I think there's potential here that the Chiefs go through a couple more weeks of growing pains with these wide receivers. And what concerned me most was it was 2 of the 3 veterans they have on the roster, and Tony and Moore, who really struggled. And veteran's a big word for both of those guys, but it kind of reflects the state of what they have at wide receiver. And so Kelce is going to come back, not 100%. He's going to play. He's going to have an impact, absolutely. Chris Jones is going to come back. He's going to have an impact. I believe that entirely. I just worry a little bit that things aren't quite figured out on offense, and it's a bold thing to say against Andy Reid and Mahomes, but I think these wide receivers are going to take a little time, just like the secondary did a year ago, and just like we see the Chiefs have with some positional group almost every season. So Jags off that playoff revenge, getting 3.5 at home with an offense that looks fantastic with Ridley added in and a couple more sneaky weapons too. I'll take the 3.5 at home with the Jags as pick number 2.
Yeah, people missed it. Chris Jones did sign. He will be there with the Chiefs. But yeah, Calvin Ridley off the parlay, looking good. All right, what's your last one?
Really good. All right, pick number 3. Todd, you went with Cincinnati. That's where I was going to go. But for the sake of the show, we'll diversify here. I saw the Giants number come back as we were recording. And so I think 4.5
it's
is
four
a fair price
now.
There.
Four.
Yep.
Yeah, 4.5. I'll
pretty happily take that one. Did earlier in the week as well. And now that it's back, I think it's fair to talk about. What I really like is Daboll and Kafka do a ton of stuff pre-snap. They're really good at forcing mismatches downfield. That Dallas matchup for them is horrible. They struggled last year. They looked awful on Sunday night. That was kind of the expectation. Really like the Cowboys in week 1. But similar to what you were saying about the Bengals, Todd, like there's some matchups for teams that just are really, really bad matchups for what they do. I think Arizona's the opposite. I think their defense looked much better than anyone thought it could against a really bad Washington offense with Sam Howell as a rookie. I think this is a completely different thing that they're going to have to deal with. I think Daboll and Kafka really take advantage of all these guys who are overplaying routes and jumping routes and getting way too aggressive the edges against Washington. They're just not going to get away with it against these two guys. And so I think it's a big rebound spot for the Giants. I'll take 4.5 there.
Yeah. God, I love all these picks, too. This is one I'm thinking of, too. By the way, the must-win situation for the Giants in week number 2, because, boy, if they were to lose this, that schedule, whew, could get ugly. And I have an alternate under win total on the Giants, but even I love them here against the Cardinals. Will, your last one.
feel obviously a lot better at three. I'll still stick with the Bears plus 2.5. I just think you go back to the season win totals, Bears and a half, Bucks were 6.5. I had this logic last week with Dolphins, Chargers, where I can't get past the point where these teams are anything but evenish. So Tampa's home field's not worth 2.5. Again, 2.5's not a key number, but an 0-1 getting points against a 1-0 team. I will take Chicago here plus the 2.5.
Chicago plus the 2.5. I've heard so many differing opinions on that game. It's unbelievable for such a dreck football game. Dodd, your last one.
Before I say my last one, just as like a little bonus action, okay. Adam, how do you feel about the team total under 17.5 for your Arizona team that didn't really do anything tremendously against Washington? And now remember, the Giants really didn't play that bad on defense. They just gave away touchdowns on blocked field goals and interceptions and all kind of nonsense. You're telling me Arizona's going to get up over the 17? I don't know. I think under 17.5 looks real delicious as a team total.
You just sold me on a team total, which is not what I expect to come out of the podcast with. But I think that's a pretty good look. Wink is going to blitz a ton. And like you mentioned, they held the Cowboys. I remember the number top. It was like 4.1, 4.2 yards per play, which weather assisted a little bit. But yeah, it's Josh Dobbs is going to have to deal with a lot up front for sure.
You just call that delicious, okay, Todd? So, delicious? Is that what you said?
I feel it's a nice low-cal dessert. Arizona Cardinals under 17.5. You have to pay a little extra vig, but it is quite delicious. So I'll probably be playing that one. Okay, so for my third one, I'm going to do something crazy here. I'm going to go down to the North Shore for week number two. And here's the thing. You're saying, well, Todd, are you crazy? You're going to pay $80 to park down there because everybody's down there. You drive at 10:30. There's people everywhere. You don't even know what you're doing. You can't park. You can't get out of your car. It's a disaster, right? But if you got the Rivers coupons, you can park for free. That's what I'll be doing. I'll be going down there, and I'll be parking for free. And I'll be telling you right now that the Pittsburgh Steelers lost a football game to the Niners. Everybody's going to lose to the Niners. The Niners are a great football team. We're not that bad. We're just not that bad. And I think when you're telling me that the Cleveland Browns, spelled B-R-A-W-H-N-S, the Cleveland Browns are going to come into a place where they never have a good time down here. I think there's one playoff game they played well. Other than that, they have a hass of horrors. It's a hass of horrors down here. They're going to have a real hard time because our Steeler defense is going to show up. I think our Kenny Pickett, which, you know, I was a little skeptical about Kenny Pickett, and I didn't like all the hype, but now Tomlin gets everybody's attention. He says, listen, Yinzers, I never have a losing season. I can't go 0-2. Give me the Pittsburgh Steelers plus a 2.5. Thank you.
I have to tell you, first of all, I love the losers. I love that part. These are all my contest picks. I'm with you on Pittsburgh, too. Like, I absolutely think, and I'll run my head into a wall against them because I ran my head into the wall with them last week. But I really feel like, let me just ask about the other side, the Brownies part of that. Mike Palm, who used to be on this Megapod, he believes, if I heard this correctly, he thinks the Browns are either the second or, let me not say that, they're a top three NFL team. He believes that. Do you believe that, Adam, that the Browns are that good?
The aggregate ratings that I look at, which pull power ratings from numerous different sources, have the Browns 8 after this week, which I saw in a second to get my head around because my initial reaction was that that's high. But, Gil, the one thing that really kind of intrigues me, they added a lot of defensive pieces, especially up front. And the change to Jim Schwartz took this defense a week ago against the Bengals. If that's the case of things to come, they're going from a sort of mid-level aggression defense like they were in 2022. Against Joe Burrow, he was blitzing a ton, was creating a ton of pressure. Like, this defense has completely flipped. And if that's a sign of things to come, and they play aggressive every week, you can put the defensive side right up there with the likes of the 49ers and the Steelers for the best units in the NFL. So I believe it on that side. Not there yet on Watson.
What about the massage parlor?
I mean, we're starting to see this rated really high.
Well, Todd, if you let him finish, that's exactly what he said, which I think is, I think most people can get with that, that the defense is maybe top tier. But Deshaun looked like the shit, I guess, is what I would say, right? Like, he didn't look good at all.
Ew.
Do you think that he's better than Zach Wilson? Because a lot of people making the case that the Jets can be a contender with their defense. If the defense is that level and you get more from Deshaun, should the same case be made about the Browns?
What's your point there? Meaning that Deshaun, that we think of Deshaun Watson as so much better than Zach Wilson, but maybe he isn't? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think the sort of sentiment that I have taken away from a lot of media after the night game for the Jets was that this team can threaten making the playoffs, and they would be very close to being a contender if they had like a top-level quarterback. And now with Zach Wilson, they can survive because of their defense and still compete. My question with the Browns is, if that defense is on the same level as the Jets, which it's very, very well in that conversation.
Right.
If Deshaun Watson is above average, we should be talking about the Browns in the same way that Mike Palm is,
maybe,
I think.
Maybe you're right. Maybe he's right. Yeah. Maybe so. He did. I mean, I got
it crossed my mind. Cleveland 10-1 to win the AFC. Browns 10-1. I haven't pulled the trigger, but that's definitely, to me, they're a fat tails team just because the uncertainty with Watson, the good on defense. I did take him to win the division. I'm high on Cleveland. I think it's a good roster.
My final pick, by the way, as I already mentioned, is going to be the same as Will's, which is I took Denver. I laid the 3.5. I don't love laying the hook, but I'll lay the hook because as a lifelong Washington fan, this just ain't a game they win. I don't know how else to put it. It's like a Malcolm Gladwell blink kind of thing. I can't really explain it to you, but they don't win this kind of game. And they don't look very good at this kind of game. And these are even in the best years. This is even Joe Gibbs 1.0. They don't go on the road to an unfamiliar AFC opponent, let alone an elevation, and win a game like this. And this outfit, with a horrible offensive line, it appears, in front of Sam Howell. I don't even blame the kid for that week one performance. That offensive line was always the big question about the Washington Commanders football team, and it remains the biggest question mark because their defensive front is solid. No one ever questioned that. Their secondary might be live. It could be much improved. They got skill. They got a few skill position players, certainly Terry McLaurin. Sam Howell's the question, but that offensive line is the big weakness, and I think Denver, who no one ever really questioned their defense last year, they lost that game to the Raiders. One could say that it was lost on the very first decision by Sean Payton to kick that onside kick, which backfired on him, gave the Raiders a short field, and they went up 7-0. They won by a point. They don't do that. Maybe the Broncos do win that game. Russell Wilson looks, you know, kind of what you would expect from a guy who looked like crap last year and who might be improved under Sean Payton, but I think he's good enough to talk about quarterbacks that we just did, like Deshaun and Zach Wilson, who can just do what they can and let the defense win games for them. I think this applies to Russell Wilson and the Broncos here. I don't think Washington wins this game. I think they don't cover either. I'll take the Broncos -3.5.
Do you think they go over 17 points, Gilly? Because I don't.
I wouldn't bet the over on it. I'll tell you that.
Todd said, you think they go over 17 points. Does he mean Washington?
Yeah, he means Washington.
Yeah, I don't think Washington.
Okay.
I don't think Washington can get over 17 points. That's another team total that I like. In fact, Washington got a lot of their points just because Arizona said, sorry, we don't want to win this game. Yeah. Here, you can have it.
Do you remember?
You know, Washington couldn't move the ball on Arizona.
Do you remember the old Eddie Murphy, one of the great Eddie Murphy sketches in Saturday Night Live when he was a regular cast member, where he put on makeup to be a white guy, and the whole conceit of the sketch was that
Mr. White,
when black people aren't around, white people just give each other shit. And there's the famous one where he just, go ahead, take the newspaper. That's exactly what Arizona did to Washington last week. Yeah.
That's a great
How much
reference.
Money would you like? That's free, Mr. White.
How much money would you like? That's right. I forgot about that line. It was so great. It's an iconic sketch. Well, you know, Arizona did. Washington got the game tying touchdown and sealed the deal on ridiculous Arizona turnovers. So, I believe, by the way, that's one of my survivor entries is just the fade Arizona entry. I don't even think about it. I just robotically take the team against Arizona. We'll see how far that entry gets. Just doing that.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Hey, this is Christina Quinn. I'm the host of Try This, the Washington Post's new series of audio courses. The idea behind Try This is to become better functioning humans without having to comb the internet for countless hours. In our first course, we learned how to sleep better. Now, we're going to learn how to make our friendships stronger. I'll offer expert tips that are doable, and I'll keep it short. So let's do this. Classes in session. Find Try This from the Washington Post wherever you listen.
Teaser of the week. There's a lot of teaser options. Adam, what do you think is the best two-team, six-point teaser?
Well, the Cowboys are borderline right now, so I'll pass on that one. I'll go with the Bills down and the 49ers down.
Bills down, 49ers. Bills got into a nice long teaser range this morning, right? So that is
Yes, it did.
Yeah, you can go through the 7 and the 3 now. With that. So Bills Niners from Adam with the Bills, of course. I already forgot who these teams are playing. The Bills, of course, are hosting the Las Vegas Raiders. And of course the Niners on the road against the Rams, who looked really good week number one. Will, what's yours?
Plenty of options here. I will go with the Bills. Take that on field goal, and I'll take the Steelers, which you guys mentioned. Look, Steelers-Browns, I have no idea who's going to win. That should be a close game, but I'd be happy to sit there with plus 8.5 in my pocket. So Steelers, Bills.
Dad.
That's the same thing that I'm doing. I'm taking the Bills minus the 2.5 because I just think that the Bills are going to somehow, you know, the Bills will find a way. Although, you know, Jimmy G, you know, we always talk about how many balls he throws directly to the other team that don't get turned into interceptions that we call the itch. Jimmy G kind of played a pretty decent game. We might want to tip our hat. Remember, Derek Carr, I don't know if anybody, if it irks anybody as much as Derek Carr irks me. I watched Derek Carr and he just used to drive me bananas. And now they don't have him. And now they have Jimmy G. You know, maybe is Jimmy G a step up from Derek Carr? I wouldn't be surprised. I'd watch that team. I still think the Bills will get there minus the 2.5, and I like my Steelers for the reasons I said already.
Do you think the guys that are about to pick off the passes from Jimmy G, they catch a glint of his eyes, they stare him in the eyes, and he's so beautiful that they're like, I can't catch this ball. You think that happens?
No? I heard one guy say that happened.
Is that right? They're like, oh, my God, he don't catch it. I have the exact same teaser. We are doomed. We are so on this. I like the Bills and the Steelers. There's no chance. Whenever three people have the same thing, it never works.
Everybody should just go bet the reverse teaser.
Yeah, it's like a, what'd you say, Todd? If it's a WNBA pick of yours, just fade it. That was what you were saying last night. Just fade me. Yeah, it's Bills. And if the Steelers are going to kill me again or kill us again, so be it. What is it? Shame on me. Shame on you once. Shame on me twice. Whatever it is. Yeah, if I jack it up the first time, shame on you. But the second time, shame on me. This could be that. If Steelers can't cover the 8.5 here against the Browns, then oh well. By the way, it's a doubleheader. It's a Monday night doubleheader for those who missed it. I probably should have started out by saying that. The Dolphins-Patriots game is a Sunday night game. And then we have the Saints-Panthers start at 7:15 Eastern, 4:15 Pacific. An hour later, so we won't quite be at halftime, the Browns and the Steelers kick off in Pittsburgh.
Why are they doing that?
It's very odd. This was, they mentioned this. Now that it's happening, I remember there was an off-season thing where they're like, oh, yeah, this is going to happen. It's going to happen more than just this week, too. It happens again. I think it might even happen three times this year. I'm not sure. Don't hold me to that.
But why don't they just start the Panther game 2 hours earlier?
Well, that's the part that bothers me. Because when they used to do the opening night, Monday night doubleheader, they used to stagger where you could watch everything. Now you're going to have two TVs going, you know.
And then we had the COVID year where we get these random at 5 o'clock Eastern starts or Tuesday at 5 o'clock. That was the one thing that was fun about that COVID year. We just random games at random times. But this one doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't really get it.
Yeah. Okay. Which brings us to, is there our final two questions already? Oh, Survivor. Adam, are you in Survivor this year? Are you playing Survivor?
Yeah, we're in everything and everything all over. So we're loaded up. Don't know if this will be the one we go with, but it would be my choice. I'd go with the Saints.
You'd go with the Saints, really?
Wow.
I would go with the Saints. I think it's a spot where you can potentially get away from any of these huge favorites, which are going to get a lot of the attention. And that's a number there that's, I think, a little bit short. I thought the move was really telling to sort of reflect the state of the Panthers. A couple injuries on the offensive line showed up. They lost their best corner on defense. Their wide receivers are banged up. Nobody can get open. I think it's a tough one for the Panthers. So I would go way off the board here. I'd go Saints and hope you get some carnage on Sunday.
Okay. Again, for those who heard that and are like, what the f*** is that I'm doing? That's what Survivor is about, though. I say that all the time. It shouldn't be named Survivor. It's right. It's misappropriately named because, again, the object is not to survive. The object is to win. Now, Adam is doing it with you know, ballsy here early in week two, where we don't really have every team sort of with our arms wrapped around them yet. But the object of that is to have like a Buffalo, for instance, right, to fall, and then carnage would ensue. And then if you advance, you're in this awesome position at that point. So New Orleans, the first of the two Monday night games, would be his play in Survivor. Didn't expect that. Will?
I think I'm going to go with Denver just because it's a team I don't want to use down the road. And like I mentioned, I don't know that Washington's offensive line is going to travel well. How on the road, 1-0 team versus the 0-1 team. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be Denver. I'm not, it's not penciled in, you know, it's not written in stone at this point, but it's going to be Denver.
I had 5 entries to begin with in Survivor. I lost on Denver last week as the only one that went out. I'm going to have Denver on one more of them this week. And if I lose on them again, Todd, excuse my language, Todd.
I haven't looked the whole thing over yet, but just off the top of my head, I might have to take the Giants against Arizona. I don't think that I'm going to be using the Giants down the road because I don't really love the Giants. So probably the Giants, but I haven't really looked it over yet, to be fair.
I mentioned it on Wednesday. I mentioned on a numbers game on Wednesday. I have 4 entries left. One will be the Broncos and one will be the Giants. For sure, the Giants being the fade Arizona one. So for me, it's that, and then I think I'll have to include Buffalo as well. I'm not gonna push all on one team, but some combination of Buffalo, Denver, and the Giants for me. What could possibly go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? All right, final two questions. And again, let me just apologize in advance to everybody. Not in advance, but while it's happening. I know the audio has not been up to snuff on this particular show. I think we've gotten the gist of everything everybody's saying, though. I promise you this will not be the case moving forward, nor has it ever been before. Unacceptable. I'm not going to have the Megapod messed with. So, final two questions. Of the big favorites, and let me list the ones that qualify, which is the one, Adam, that you think is the most likely to lose outright? This is also sort of the money line parlay killer segment, if you will. So the Eagles are, I'm seeing some ticks, about six consensus, 6-point favorites tonight at home against the Minnesota Vikings. Also a choice in this, the Buffalo Bills, 8.5-point favorites at home against the Raiders. The San Francisco 49ers are 7-point favorites at home, on the road, pardon me, against the at the Los Angeles Rams. Cowboys, 8.5 or 9-point favorites at home against the New York Jets. And those are your options. Of those four, I believe I mentioned 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, which is the most likely to lose outright?
I have to say the Eagles. A really powerful group hit the Jets yesterday, which makes me sort of want to go that direction. But I think the Vikings of these underdogs has the best offense by quite a considerable margin. And so in terms of getting some points to pull the upset, I would go to Minnesota in that one.
By the way, when we did this last week, Will had Kansas City. They lost outright. Fezzik and I had Minnesota. They lost outright. Todd, what did you have? You had
had Colts to beat the Jets.
You had the Colts to beat the Jets, and they might have to beat the Jags, and they almost did. By the way, how did the Colts not cover that game? Good grief.
Oh, let's move on. I don't need to relive that. Let's just move on.
Oh, my God. They were up with the ball with like 12 minutes left, and then that punt return from Jamal Agnew changed everything.
They were also Gilly at the 1 yard line for the backdoor touchdown, yes. And then their quarterback got a boo boo, and then they put in some other guy who was terrible and wouldn't even get it in.
Gardner.
What part of "Let's move on" was unclear? Let's just move on. This is, I don't need to relive this. That was awful.
All right, Will. Same question. What's the big favorite, most likely to lose outright this week?
I'll go Dallas. I think the Jets defense keep them in the game. I'm sorry, I couldn't hear who he asked, but I will go with the Cowboys just because of the defense of the
Cowboys.
Jets.
Okay. Dodd.
I mean, I know I said the Bills. I like the Bills in the teaser, but I could make a case for the Jimmy G Raiders going into Buffalo and, you know, using the Jets. You know, maybe there's something wrong with the Bills. I mean, I don't really think there is. I just think that was a Jets defense, and that's what everybody thinks. But maybe there's some tape that shows how to slow the Bills down, and the Raiders could figure it out.
Yeah, I think I have to pick the Bills too, not because I think it's going to happen, like you said, but if I'm thinking about the Niners, which, by the way, isn't exactly as much as I love the Niners, like the little part of me wonders about that too, but I think the Bills are the one. And yes, they should have beaten the Jets, but the Josh Allen not caring for the football thing, you know, the three picks to Jordan Whitehead, obviously the fumble as well. He's a fumble machine. He's had the most turnovers in the NFL since the year 2019 of any quarterback. And as long as you're a turnover machine, there's always that chance, right? So he's, to me, they're the answer, the Buffalo Bills. Even though I don't think it's going to happen, they're the answer to that question.
That coach stinks too. I'm not a McDermott fan. The 13 seconds in Kansas City last year, the no show at big favorites at home against the Bengals. I thought he coached a terrible game the other night. Overtime, it's 2nd and 15. He runs a draw. I mean, how do you lose that game the other night? To me, McDermott's not a good coach.
And do you agree with what I said I said this during the game. We were texting, Will, and then I also mentioned it on Guessing Lines on Monday, which is Buck and Aikman did not seize on this at all. That second, that penalty, that offensive right. PI. That would have pushed a Zuerlein field goal from 43 yards to 53 if the Jets didn't move the ball. He just said decline the penalty, and Zuerlein kicks a 43-yard field goal, which cut the score from to 13-6 at the time. And Aikman and Buck said nothing. And I thought, like, they might have lost the game on that in the end. Like, that's a terrible decision right there.
Not a fan of the coach at all.
Yeah. Anyway.
By the way, love to trip somebody on a punt return very, very obviously. Is that now part of the rules? You're allowed to just throw your legs out and trip a guy on a punt return?
Yeah. What got a lot of backlash, what Todd is referring to is on the winning punt return from Gibson, that there was a trip that went uncalled, and John Perry, their officiating consultant on the broadcast, made a point to say that. But the issue with what people had with what he said was is that it comes with an asterisk, right? That the win comes with an asterisk, which I
believe... No, they would have won anyway.
Yeah, which I believe was on the heels of Tirico the previous week when the Lions beat the Chiefs, saying this win comes with an asterisk because they didn't have Travis Kelce or Chris Jones. So I think people got really pissed about that. But was it probably a call? Yeah, it probably was, but like stuff gets missed all the time. And they
were still in borderline field goal range, right. And all these games bleed together. Wasn't there an early whistle at some point where the Jets had a fumble and maybe a fumble or a touchdown and they blew it dead? Or am I thinking of a different game?
Maybe you're thinking of the Cal game on Saturday night where Cal got hosed by that. Cal should have had a defensive touchdown and it got whistled dead. Ended up costing them the game probably.
I'm trying to think. I think it was the Jets game where they I don't know if they reviewed it. It was in the first half where I think they blew an early whistle. They blew something dead. I'm trying to think of the play.
Yeah.
The reason I got so upset with that, Will, is I had the game to land odd, and if they kick the field goal, 19-16 is the final, and I don't know how the game doesn't land odd. It was like so perfectly set up, you know, 13-13, give me 16-13, give me 19-16, give me anything that is the normal way it's supposed to land, and I win, and then the kicker, the punter, does an olay. Even after the trip, all that punter guy has to do is like hold him up just a little bit, and the cavalry is going to come and make the tackle at the 7. They kick the field goal. But no, that guy does a complete ole touchdown.
I was live undering that game repeatedly, And the fact that I only ended up winning like two of those live unders, or even like the preflop and one live, was just ridiculous in the end. Like, I cannot believe I didn't win all of these. Like, that was just such an unbelievable result of that game. I alluded to this earlier, that off-air. Adam, you're a Jets fan. Ryan Tannehill is the guy you would want on the roster now? That's who you would like?
Yeah, I think it was Adam Silva tweeted it this morning, and it was a perfect explanation. When you think about trying to find a veteran quarterback that's not somebody that's been on the shelf or away from real playing time for the better part of 2 or 3 years like most other lists are conceived of, Tannehill's the guy that plays for the team that has the most to evaluate behind him. Willis took what looked to be a pretty considerable second-year leap. They also have Will Levis. And Tannehill's been a guy that's got teams with far less offensive talent as that game manager role to the playoffs in the past, too. So I think that could work. Now, when it comes to the whole cap situation and capital, what can and cannot be given up, that's a whole different conversation. But I think that would be the name that certainly jumps out the most to me.
Wow, that is more than one surprising thing from you on this show, the survivor pick being the other one. I
actually heard that Don Strzok is available, as well as Jake Delhomme. Jake Delhomme and Don Strzok are both available.
Don Strzok, always a reliable backup. You got to go with Don Strzok. No, and I was also saying, because there was like all these other reports, oh, why they're interested in Jacoby Brissett. Why in the world would Washington trade Jacoby Brissett? Like, to go the rest of the year with Sam Howell and Jake Fromm, State Farm? They don't want to do that. They don't want to do that at all. So, I mean, there's some of these. Like Chris Collinsworth's famous line, most important position is quarterback, second most important position is backup quarterback. So a lot of these that are speculative, I'm just like, why would that team do that? Tannehill.
How about that guy Dutch?
Tannehill makes sense.
What about
though?
The Steelers? The Steelers had that guy Dutch Hobbs, or what was his name? He had like a funny name.
Oh,
they had, like,
Duck. Duck.
Oh, yeah, Duck.
Yeah. Yeah.
Duck Hodges or something like that.
Yeah.
Wait, so who did Adam
have? Parcells line. You can't just dial 1-800 quarterback.
What is it, Will? Say again, Will.
You can't just dial 1-800. I think he was in a press conference and they were asking him, you know, a second question, a third question about the quarterback. He goes, look, guys, what do you think I can do? Just pick up the phone and dial 1-800 quarterback and they bring me a player? It's not how it works.
That's right. Adam, also, before we ask the final question, you said also, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but like you have some opinions. What would you characterize as like your most outlying opinion right now based on either the market or based on what you're hearing just sort of anecdotally? What do you believe that most others don't?
Ooh. What stands out the most right now? I think Cowboys Super
Bowl. How do you feel
about
the vaccines, Adam? I guess what he's asking is, how do you feel about the vaccines?
Yeah, what do you think about the vax?
He said hot on opinions. No, I think Cowboys Super Bowl, Gil. I don't know how outrageous that counts as, but that one I've come to sort of accept over the last couple of weeks. I think that offense is going to be really, really good.
So you have the Cowboys in the Super Bowl.
I think Cowboys win the Super
win
Bowl.
Win the Super
would
Bowl.
Would be my...
Wow.
Take at the moment.
Okay, let me ask you reverse, because I asked this, and I think this is even more insightful. What is the thing or the opinion, the shared consensus opinion that you've heard either this offseason or even after week one that you hear and you're still like, what the hell are these people talking about? Like, I just can't get to where they're getting about Team X.
That's another good one. Let's go on that one with the Chargers offense changing to this electric, deep downfield passing, explosive unit. I know that's what Kellen Moore is saying. We saw them do nothing but run the football against Miami. Yeah. And I know you can kind of look at the Fangio stuff and say the scheme forces that. I get it. But that's a Dolphins defense that's not ready yet. And so I think Kellen Moore and his early run rates from Dallas have carried over to the Chargers. And with Staley as the head coach, as aggressive as he might be, there's kind of a want to keep things how they looked in week one. And it just might be an offense that, because of how defenses play them, is going to rely on the run a lot. So that would be something that I hear all over, that I certainly believe during the summer, that I'm really sort of switching my gears on with that.
Mm. Okay, good answer.
Can we still call Staley aggressive? Would you still quantify him as aggressive? I'm asking this rhetorically, Adam. I mean, he was so different year one from year two.
I I think deep down he still is. But this is kind of like that Fezzik comment I made where the media changes you. No matter, we see it all the time with coaches. It's really hard to stay at that level, sort of
peer pressure,
cater to keeping your job and balancing it. So I think what he was to start with all those decisions is who he wants to be. I think the media has changed and sort of balanced him out. And it's not uncommon with coaches that make which.
Do you agree with what I was saying at the beginning, which is though that like he got destroyed by some people for all of the, you know, what was perceived as reckless risk taking on fourth downs in year number one. And now doesn't like everybody play like he does? Maybe not everybody, but so many do.
Yeah, and that's like football watching media, and we're all in that. But we're all kind of nuts when it comes to this stuff because something stands out that's a little bit different. We get this like collective opinion on how we're supposed to watch football and what we should expect to happen. And then it slowly changes, but no one ever really acknowledges
that
it's consistently changing into something new.
That's what I'm trying to acknowledge.
Right. And so now there's almost more criticism for coaches that don't go for it rather than criticism for coaches that do go for it when they get it wrong.
100%.
And it's shifting now to like a weird difference. And so that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah.
That's called the computer dating situation. If you remember when computer dating first came out, when the internet came out and people were like, oh, what are you, crazy? You're going to go on a computer and date somebody on a computer? And I believe now everyone dates off the computer. So it's, you know, human beings have this weird thing where they think something's crazy until all of a sudden they decide it's not crazy. And most people are followers anyways. If you've ever seen those experiments where they have like 10 people in a room and they all say that the one line is longer than the other, even though it's clearly not, because they're all working with the doctor. And then the 10th guy comes in and they ask him, and he obviously knows it, that they're all lying, but he can't bring himself to buck the people, even though he clearly knows. So human beings have this tendency, and you know, gamblers are no different. So that doesn't shock me at all.
That's Todd's favorite experiment that he likes to cite. I love that.
That experiment.
It is so true. The human mind is so impressionable and so malleable, right? It's why cults exist. By the way, the sports equivalent to just the thing that popped in my head, and I think Will and I have talked about, certainly Jason and I have talked about, you know, how in baseball, we realized, the analytics community realized, oh, these baseball card stats, wins, losses on a pitcher, it actually doesn't control a lot of that. Like, it shouldn't be, you know, because back in the day, oh my God, this guy's win-loss record is this, and we thought it was so big. And then finally, like, Felix won a Cy Young, winning 12 games, I believe it was, in 2010. And so we finally, like, the pendulum swung. Well, now it's almost like at the point where we almost undervalue it, right? If we do have a pitcher that wins 20 games, it's almost this weird thing where it's like, well, shouldn't that actually be a thing in some way? Because we've like completely thought that it means nothing. Well, it means something, right? So it's like, I'm just saying, like, the groupthink on a lot of this stuff, maybe it's a dirty analogy, but the groupthink on some of this stuff goes way too far. You know, not everything is 100% and 0% or black and white, as we like to say. Okay, final question. Bizarro World, all 16 games, you have to bet a side in 15 of them. Adam, which is the game you want no part of on the side?
Seahawks Lions. Gil, I know you like Seattle. I feel like in every other year of my existence, I would like Seattle. I worry a little bit if the league is caught up to Geno and this offense
you
is just not right. So I'm staying away.
You could be right. I could be very wrong on that. Dodd. Oh, no. Let's go Will.
I will go Chiefs Jaguars. I mean, Jaguars.
Thank
I apologize.
You.
I know I'll get
Thank
scolded
you.
For that.
Scold.
Yes.
Scold.
Andy Reid with extra time to prepare. Chiefs looking to avoid 0-2. You can make a case for the Chiefs, but I'm not looking to lay 3.5 on the road with that team against the Jags. So that's a pretty easy pass for me.
Dad.
I don't want any part of the Packers. Jordan Love proved me wrong last week. I'm still not sold on the guy. The Falcons are going to be 3 yards in a cloud of dust. John Fox football. Let the other team beat itself, and we'll get wins. And I'll take the Yankees team total under today. I don't know if anybody has seen who they're trouting out there, but the lineup would be better if me and Gil and Will were hitting two, three, four.
Are you kidding me? This is Will Hill's favorite thing in the world is looking at the Yankees lineup every day. It's his big. It's his monogram. It's his calling card.
Who's hitting fifth? Who's hitting sixth?
Dude, the Yankees are having Floreal, Tez, Wells, Volpe, Bowers, Peraza, Cabrera, Pereira. And that's Mike Pereira, the NFL guy on Fox. He's going to be hitting ninth for the Yankees tonight. So this game goes off in 20 minutes. You know what? If I lose, I lose. Yankees team total under. I'm sorry. That's not a major league lineup.
First five or full game, Todd? What are you doing for anybody who catches this early enough?
What did you say?
Are you doing full game or first five on the team total?
Oh, I'm doing both. I can't believe this lineup.
Yeah. Okay. Mine is actually the Dolphins game. The Dolphins-Patriots game, just because of what I said earlier, which is I don't know what's real and what's not. Like, is the Patriots defense really all that good, or was that just because they played an Eagles team that played nobody in the preseason? Or are they who a lot of us thought they were, just not very good? And the same thing applies to the Dolphins. Like, that defense was so bad, and yet they showed up the last drive, obviously. And is that offense really that good? Can it be that good week after week? I should mention that I bet Tyreek Hill MVP 75-1 yesterday. It's my Luis Arraez try to hit 400 bet in baseball. Didn't happen, by the way. It's 349. But the theory being that if Luis Arraez hit 400, which would be the first time since 1941, obviously a hallowed record, that they'd have to vote him MVP. Obviously, this is not as hallowed a record in football. Stats aren't as hallowed in football as they are in baseball. But if he gets 2,000 yards receiving, this whole nonsense that the NFL MVP only goes to quarterbacks, which has been the case the last 4 years, like, I think a lot of voters would have to be like, oh, this has never happened before. We got to vote for this guy for MVP. So anyway, I feel great about the Dolphins offense. But on the other hand, I don't know. Maybe that was just one game aberrational. So that's the game I want no part of, really. I can tell you're all very moved by that. Okay.
I would just very quickly say, I mean, we both talked to Aaron Schatz before, and he's been very clear. Hey, I can never see myself voting for a non-quarterback ever again. And
he could never see himself. Oh, right. Because of his analytics viewpoint, he can't do it because the quarterback is so much more valuable. Right.
Yes.
He texted me yesterday with very harrowing words. He says, I just want to break this to you personally. Football Outsiders, which is where he used to work, but he's at FTN now, and he's the owner of the DVOA, proprietary DVOA stat, because that's his. He created it. The 1991 Washington Redskins were always the greatest team of all time. So he says, I have good news and bad news. I refined the analysis. He says, now the 2007 Patriots are actually rated higher than the 1991 Redskins. The good news is...
Who?
The 1991 Skins.
No. Who's the other team?
The 2007 Patriots, who were undefeated till they lost in the Super Bowl.
Oh, right.
But he said the good news is I haven't evaluated the playoffs, the postseason yet. He believes that 91 Skins will go ahead of the Patriots again once he evaluates postseason. So anyway, that's the update since you bring up Aaron Schatz, who'll be a guest on this show later this month on the Megapod. So look forward to that. Again, my apologies. Last apology about the audio problems. We'll work that out. Adam Chernoff from Right Angle Sports. Adam, always appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thanks very much, guys. Always great to be here.
Todd Wishnev from his mom's dining room today. And Will Hill, who's on the Bear Bets podcast. When did the Bear Bets podcast come out, Will?
Thursday, the college one, so that should be coming out. By the time you listen to this, that should be out. And then tomorrow morning is the NFL one, so look for those. And, this was fun. I'm in with Todd's Yankees first five team total. I can't find better than minus 155, but I'm gonna roll with it here.
Under first five, and Todd's doing both first five and full game. Thank you all for listening. Good luck with your week two bets in the National Football League.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.